So you may have noticed after our last couple of days together that it's not always easy being with this body mind. At times actually it's just hard. You know, we have this sensitive, vulnerable body mind. But you also may have started to see how the strategies we have of distraction, of aversion, of seeking, don't actually make things any better. Often what they do is they make things a lot worse. They're like adding fuel to the fire. This sense that Laura talked about of the second arrow. So there's the first arrow, and then this second arrow just increases the difficulty, the pain, the suffering. But again, not to make this wrong. You know, sometimes we really just need to turn down the sensitivity and to go inside and turn on Netflix and just kind of zone out for a while in front of a film. But there's a really big difference between doing that in a conscious way than actually doing it as an automatic reaction. Although it's the same thing we're doing, the intention is very different. When we realize that actually I just need to relax and regulate and just allow the system some space, and doing and turning on the TV is a way of doing that, then we're actually doing it from an intention of kindness rather than this automatic, I don't like this, I don't want it, how do I escape this? Oh, turn on the TV, without any sense of awareness of what's going on. So what we've been pointing to over these last couple of days is the difference between awareness of something and the something itself. So when we're aware of something, there's space. There's the possibility of something else. And you may have noticed this in your experience. Whereas when we're actually caught in something, the attention, the awareness, it all contracts down around it and there's no space for anything else. So, like many people, one of the things I really struggled with over my practice life is the inner critic. And for me, the narrative has always been around not being good enough. And as I've become more and more familiar with this narrative, how it feels when it's there, being able to be with it in awareness rather than caught in it, and seeing what it does when I'm caught in it, my relationship to it has changed. And what I've discovered is when I'm aware of it, and I'm just with it, I can actually at times consciously decide I'm just not going to do that to myself because I know where it's going to lead. I know it's just going to lead to a lot of pain and self-judgment and harshness and suffering. But when I get caught by it, when I'm in it, that possibility disappears and I find myself causing myself a lot of pain. So this awareness of being with creates a step back where there's space for another possibility. Within this, it's really important to notice that different impacts on our system, different objects, actually have different intensities, different tractions on the mind. Some things are just really, really difficult for us to meet. And that movement into this automatic reactivity that we've talked about, this tanha, this thirst, this craving, can be so quick and so automatic. Something arises, it's unpleasant, don't like it, don't want it, push it away, and I'm doing something to get rid of it. which can cause myself harm, someone else harm. But it's also important to recognize with this, particularly with the difficult, that actually sometimes it can be too much to bear. This isn't a project of endurance. It's not like we have to be with everything that's coming up completely and just bear with it. Sometimes we need to recognize that actually this is difficult. This is hard to bear. And actually staying with it can actually cause more difficulty than actually finding a way of backing off. We can actually reactivate trauma by trying to push through something rather than meet it with kindness. So we talk about in this titration or this sense of being able to back off and move the attention to something that's less afflicted. So with those really difficult aspects of our experience, noticing, is this movement to being overwhelmed? Is there this movement of actually more fear, more difficulty arising with it as I meet it? And if there is, it's a kind of a sign that actually I need to back off here a bit. I need to move my attention to in a way that actually can start to bring some sense of regulating the system, resourcing the system, rebalancing the system. So there's also, again, this kindness of moving and being able to move the attention in a way that supports us, rather than this warrior spirit of just go for it, push through, doesn't matter. But of course that's only possible when there's awareness there. Because the awareness creates the space to actually be able to be open to more possibilities in your experience. So Laura has this image of being in the river and, you know, there's been a really big downpour and suddenly the river becomes more of a raging torrent. And in that instance, how do we actually ground ourselves and find stability? By lowering our center of gravity or by moving into the shallows. So it might be that actually we come back to the simplicity of the ground, that sense of actually how the contact of the feet on the earth is okay. There's nothing much happening there. I can just rest the attention there. If there's some pain in the body, it might be allowing that into the background and actually moving the attention to another part of the body where there's a bit more ease, a bit more relaxation. And we can then start to have this movement when we're feeling more resourced, more regulated, when there's more capacity in the system, we can bring the attention back, touch the edges, see how much we can be with this. And then this, again, feeling into, all right, this is becoming too much again. I need to back off. I need to move the attention to something that's more supportive in this moment. And this movement backwards and forwards gradually allows us to meet more and more of these really difficult areas of our experience. It's meeting ourselves with this kindness that knows the capacity we have in any moment, but also what actually serves us and supports us in well-being and in reducing the amount of difficulty and suffering in our life. One of the things we also talked about within this is how the pleasant and the unpleasant, in a sense, are quite easy to notice. They just draw the attention. If something's pleasant, there's this movement towards it. If something's unpleasant, this movement towards it. The difficulty is the automatic nature of this. So how habitual this is in how the attention moves. And how within that, we have most of us have a very strong negativity bias. So as we become more familiar with this, we actually become more able to actually place our attention where we want to, in a way that's supportive. But also we start to actually notice that automatic movement afterwards, that reactivity of push-pull with experience and where that leads. But as has been raised a few times in notes we've come across, a lot of our life is actually in that more nothing much happening area. You know, we go through our day and we're traveling on the tube, we're making food, we're brushing our teeth, we're having a cup of tea. There's a lot of like things that are happening in our day that aren't very attractive to the attention. They don't have any strong pull. And in that area, our tendency is really just to zone out, a lack of interest. And working in that area is a really, really fruitful practice. When we can start to learn to be with the neither pleasant nor unpleasant, we start to discover that actually this area of practice, this area of experience, is actually very peaceful. It's very easeful. It's actually a space that really allows the system to rest. A lot of the pleasant, unpleasant really, if you like, activates the system. And a lot of this more neutral space is actually a space where the organism just naturally can rest. But we have to be present to allow that resting to happen. Otherwise we get caught in seeking something else, seeking something that's more stimulating. Again, this is a really, really deep habit. But what this also starts to do is it starts to shift some of this negativity bias. Because one of the ways we experience it is that something has to be five times as pleasant as unpleasant for it to register. So we tend to have quite a high bar for what is happiness or joy in our lives. And quite a low bar for what's unpleasant and needs to be got rid of. And as we become more familiar with this space in between, we start to discover that actually the more subtle nuances of joy in our life, how restful and easeful it can be just to sit and enjoy looking at a flower. If the interest is there, if we can stay with it, it can be just very restful on the system. And we can start to discover those much more subtle joys in our life. Sitting in the park or the garden and the birds singing. Again, if we can just relax into that, there's nothing much happening. But it can be very restful and very nourishing and bring a level of joy into our lives. And this joy that we experience is really the joy of connection. Connection with ourselves and our lived experience, but also connection with the world around us, with the other. We start to connect to this sense of not being so separate from the world. We can really experience ourselves as separate, isolate beings that are trying to hold the world at bay and get that sense of security and pleasantness and happiness in our lives. And actually we start to see it's not quite like that. That there's this interdependence, this interconnection, this embeddedness in the world. We're impacted and we impact the world. And we can start to really touch into that sense of connection and how it touches us. And the joy that resides in just being present with our experience. That example I gave about being with the loneliness and that movement into joy at the end wasn't a joy because the loneliness was now gone. It was actually a joy that came from being connected to myself, to actually really experiencing my life. And for my life in that moment to be okay just as it was showing up. So what we've been alluding to a lot within this is how our experience in any moment, we could say, is a meeting of external conditions with internal conditions. So there's the objects of our experience. It might be a sight, a sound, smell, taste, something touching the body. It might be a thought. And then there's our relationship to it, how we're meeting it. The mood in our mind, whether we're feeling tired or alert, all of these things impact our experience. In other words, our internal landscape shapes and colours our experience. And when we can move from that metaphor of looking, of that automatic reactive habitual way of being in life, to this metaphor of seeing, this receiving, opening, being with through awareness of our experience. What starts to happen is we notice those movements. We notice that movement of craving, of not liking or wanting, of trying to hold on to or get rid of. And we allow that to be there. We bear with it. And we notice that as we bear with it, it starts to subside. And in that subsiding, there's a space. And there's a space for something different to arise. So in conjunction with the qualities we've been inclining our mind towards, so kindness, patience, compassion, generosity, all these lovely qualities of the heart, in that space, these qualities have the possibility to arise and actually guide our response to the situation where we find ourselves in. We create the possibility of another response, as a response that's actually appropriate to the situation rather than an automatic habitual reaction. So this practice is not a project of making ourselves a better person. It's not a project of getting rid of the bits we don't like and accruing some nicer bits that make us a better person or a nicer person. The paradox of this practice is that all we're called to do is meet our experience, to really bear with it in awareness, without judgment, with these qualities of kindness, of interest, of compassion, patience, and allow that to actually guide a more natural, organic response that's coming from a different place. And that itself brings change. Not because we're trying to make change happen, but because we're allowing another possibility, guided by different qualities, to come into being. Einstein said, when we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. And that's really what we're pointing to here. When we change the way we relate to things, when we move into a different relationship with our experience, when we allow our mind to incline to different qualities, our experience is different. And you may have noticed this over these last few days. When you meet your experience with kindness, does it feel qualitatively different to when you meet it with aversion? And that really is a question to hold. Everything we're saying here is an invitation to check out for yourselves. The Buddha had the phrase, ehi passiko, come see. In other words, don't take my word for it, but actually check out for yourself in your own experience. Is this true for you? Does this support you in living a more authentic life, a life more in tune with what it is you really value? And just to follow, if you find, like myself and Nora has, that that's the case, to start to cultivate a trust in that. Trusting that actually, when I meet my experience with kindness and with awareness, when I'm with it rather than in it, then another possibility can arise. A response that's more supportive and helpful can arise. But also, over time, cultivating that trust that actually this is possible for me. And not looking for perfection within this. I think this is an important part of it. There's a lovely phrase that has really resonated with me over my practice life from a Zen teacher in the 6th century, I think. And he said, true freedom is being without anxiety about imperfection. We will get things wrong, we will make mistakes. We don't need to make ourselves bad or wrong about that. We can just learn from that. Everything that happens is an opportunity to learn, to see what supports, what actually brings the qualities of kindness and so on into the world, and what doesn't. So I'd like to finish with a poem from Rumi, which I think is, yeah, really speaks to this whole territory. It's a translation of The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. It may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Nothing left out, nothing excluded. No right experience. just meet in our lives moment by moment, as best we can, with as much kindness, as much compassion, as much care as we can in the moment. And when it's not like that, not making that wrong. So, thank you for your attention.